A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Let's take a look at Todd McShay's latest mock draft. Zach Wilson going second overall to the Jets. The second quarterback taken. Todd also has Justin Fields going 11th to the Patriots. That via a trade, the fifth quarterback taken. On that note, let's bring in draft expert Mel Kiper Jr. on this debate. And not trying to confuse everyone at home. Yes, that is Todd McShay's mock draft. But I'm bringing in my guy Mel here. Mel, good to see you as always. And we're going to debate this one. And you'll be the tiebreaker. So, Max, I'll start with you. Who do you think should be drafted first? Is it Fields or Wilson?
Look, I'm no Mel Kiper Jr., and I don't pretend to know, to have studied as closely as Mel. Obviously not. And I'm also aware, before I tell you my answer, I am aware that the history of the modern draft has been black quarterbacks tend to fall, African-American quarterbacks tend to fall, white quarterbacks tend to rise in the draft. Let's be honest. Sometimes people are right. Looks like Daniel Jones is better than Dwayne Haskins. Sometimes they're wrong. Looks like Mitch Trubisky ain't ever going to be Deshaun Watson or Patrick Mahomes. But that's the trend I noticed. Doesn't mean white quarterbacks never fall or an African-American quarterback's never taken first overall. But that's the general trend. So when I first heard this debate, I was skeptical because I'd seen a lot of Justin Fields. I thought he was great. Zach Wilson. Come on, Zach Wilson. And then last month, I've been watching a lot of Zach Wilson. Oh, my God. The answer is Zach Wilson. Zach Wilson has the kind of talent that is so obvious when you watch him. And the most obvious thing is not even, you know, the maneuverability or the mobility generally or the off-schedule stuff people talk about, off-platform. It's the arm talent. This dude can sling it. I mean, that has to do with off-platform, but this dude can sling it from anywhere precisely down the field with the kind of zip on the ball that you only get from elite quarterbacks in the NFL. Like, if Trevor Lawrence is going to go one, but it's almost like once that pressure's taken off you, you're in an enviable position because you get to take Zach Wilson. It jumps out at you when you watch him. And Mel and Stephen A., it reminds me a little bit of, like, the draft with Eli and Philip Rivers, because Roethlisberger was also like a guy who I hadn't seen a lot, but I'd heard about, especially toward the draft. And then when you watch him, you go, oh, yeah, I see why I'm hearing about him. Same thing with Zach Wilson for me. It jumps out at you when you watch him. I think he's the second best quarterback in the draft, at least.
A couple things I take exception with, Max, from what you said is, first of all, Dan Marino dropped an 83, and a Cal Davis quarterback went ahead of him. Ben Roethlisberger went 11. Brett Favre went in the second round. Drew Brees went in the second round when Michael Vick was the first player taken. And you think about Justin Herbert last year, a couple third quarterback taken. Josh Allen fell when he was projected to go number one by me a few weeks before the draft. So I think when you look at the quarterback situation this year, you mentioned talent. You said that Zach Wilson has talent. Well, the better talent is Justin Fields. Justin Fields is bigger, he's faster, arm strength equally as good. Think about the performance. That's the thing you next go. Let's go to performance, production. Justin Fields in 2019, 41 touchdowns, 3 picks, one of those interceptions that ended that game against Clemson was on the receiver, not on Justin Fields. So 2 on him, that's it. This year, 6 picks, 5 in 2 games, that's it. And he was at 67% last year, he's at 70% this year. Level of competition, the other thing. Much stronger for Justin Fields than Zach Wilson. So I think when you look at Zach, I like Zach. This is where you get into, you knock one, you act like you don't like, I like Zach. He's my third highest rated quarterback, but solidly number two. From the time they came out of high school, it was Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields. There's no reason to change that now. He outperformed Trevor Lawrence on that field with 6 touchdowns, 1 pick. And in that game, Max, he was at almost 80% against Clemson in a game where he needed to perform. That was the pivotal game for me. The pressure was on because he had not played well against Indiana and Northwestern. And he went out there as an underdog and he single-handedly, despite being hurt significantly, played through that injury and led that team to that victory and then played hurt in the championship game. So to me, he has the medal, he has the talent, he has the performance, the production against elite competition. That's enough to give him the edge for me over Zach Wilson.
The key for me is always about the level of competition that you're going against when you do what it is that you do. Last time I checked, Ohio State was competing for national championships. I don't know what the hell BYU was doing. I mean, they were respectable and we know they can play and all of that other stuff, but still, I didn't hear anything too much about Zach Wilson until until, you know, obviously the season was over and we're talking about the NFL scouting combine coming up and pro days and all of this other stuff and where he's going to be drafted. Now, do I have concerns about Justin Fields? Absolutely. I think I heard some report, Mel Kiper. I don't know if it's accurate or not. Maybe you can tell me about he checked down only about six times and you know, in 200 throws or something like that. I don't know what's true or not. I will tell you that I don't think it matters. I'll tell you what matters to me. In 2 years as a starter at Ohio State after coming over from Georgia, the man has thrown, what is it here, 63 touchdowns and 9 interceptions. He's completed 70% of his passes his last year. I'm looking at it from that perspective, along with the fact that he was winning football games and putting Ohio State in a position to legitimately compete for a national title. That's what I'm looking at. I'm also looking at the fact that we said Trevor Lawrence clearly was number one. But after that, we had Justin Fields as a number two. Somebody needs to explain to me how you go from being a number two quarterback to being fifth. We went from looking at nobody but Trevor Lawrence ahead of him to now looking at Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, along with Mac Jones. I'm trying to figure out how the hell that happened when not a game has been played. When the season was over, when Ohio State finished playing football, he was number two. But since that time, strictly on workouts, and I guess people had additional time to watch film, suddenly you're the fifth quarterback instead of number two. I'm trying to figure out how the hell that happened. That raises a red flag to me. I don't know what that red flag is, but it has my eyebrows raising. All I'm saying is at the end of the day, he's bigger, he's stronger, he's more athletic. The arm strength is equal to what we get from Zach Wilson. You take all those things into consideration combined with what we're seeing from NFL quarterbacks in this day and age. When we look at the Lamar Jacksons of the world, the Deshaun Watsons of the world, the Patrick Mahomes of the world and others. Even the last time we saw Patrick Mahomes, he was running for his life. I think he ran for almost 400 yards, scrambling away from Tampa Bay defenders. In the end, what it comes down to is your mobility plays a significant role on the next level as it pertains to your abilities to succeed outside of the Tom Brady's and Drew Brees's of the world. That's how I look at it. That's what I like about Justin Fields, along with the resume in terms of the level of competition he performed against. And that's who I'm most comfortable with at this particular moment in time of Trevor Lawrence.
I hear what you're saying about red flag. That's why I prefaced what I said with, you know, how I did. And Mel, I'm not saying white quarterbacks never fall. Sure, they do. But I noticed the trend in recent years, especially in those drafts, is sometimes the evaluators are right, as I said. Like Daniel Jones looks like he's going to be better than Dwayne Haskins, right? But sometimes they're wrong. But the positive correlation I can see is consistently African-American quarterbacks falling and vis-a-vis white quarterbacks who, if anything, rise. What I'm saying in this case, Stephen A., is I agree with you. Justin Fields was one of the most ballyhooed prospects ever coming out of high school, right? Like, along with Trevor Lawrence. And for so long, it was like 1A and 1B. Are we sure Trevor Lawrence is better? And now all of a sudden, there are four dudes ahead of him. I get what you're saying. What I'm saying is when I watch, and Mel, I'm not pretending to be you. I'm just talking about what I see with my eyes is from Zach Wilson, arm talent. You know, I like Justin Herbert, we talk Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, I'm not saying he's any of those guys, but what they have, what Matthew Stafford has, like, that's why the Rams think, I think, that he has a kind of arm talent, not just how far you can throw the ball, but an arm talent to me that jumps out at you. And that's why I like Zach Wilson second best in this draft, Fields third for me.
If Fields has that equally as good arm talent as Zach Wilson does. And I think when you look at it, Max, I think, you know, look at Trey Lance. Trey Lance could go ahead of Justin Fields. Trey Lance played one game against one AA competition. It was a 50% completion percentage. Yet he could go ahead of Justin Fields in this draft. So as Mac Jones could be with only 17 starts, equaling the number of starts of Trey Lance. So I think when you look at if he does become the fifth quarterback taken, which looks like he may be.
Steal.
There's nothing wrong with that. It's not, at the end of the world. Like I said, Justin Herbert was the third quarterback taken. Rodgers fell into the 20s when we were projecting him to go number one just weeks before the draft. Spurgeon Wynn from Southwest Texas State, Max, went ahead of Tom Brady. Okay? So when you look back into history, we talk about all these issues, but the bottom line is if you're the final quarterback taken in the first round, it's going to be in the top 10, in my opinion, for Justin Fields, then you're in good shape because history has proven that, whether it's Dan Marino, whoever it may be, Brett Favre in the second round, when other quarterbacks went in the first, that quarterback that fell nine times out of 10 has done really well in the NFL.
Mel, I think you'd agree with what I'm about to say. Everything, Max, isn't predicated on just your ability. It's about your availability. It's about your discipline as well. When we think about Daniel Jones compared to Dwayne Haskins, I don't think we were wrong in surmising or coming to the conclusion, rather, that, okay, Dwayne Haskins, based on him coming out of Ohio State, some of the things that he was capable of doing, that, you know what, I'd rather have faith in him than Daniel Jones. The problem is that once they got to the pro level, Daniel Jones showed that he was more of a grown-up. He had his head in the books. He was studying film, studying the playbook, trying to be ready to play, particularly to be the successor to Eli Manning. Dwayne Haskins clearly wasn't disciplined enough to do the kind of things that he was supposed to do. So as far as I'm concerned, it's not even a matter of talent between Dwayne Haskins and Daniel Jones, because we still don't know as of yet. What we do know is that Daniel Jones was more of a grown-up, and that's the biggest issue right now.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Mel. I think you guys are – you just touched on something, though, and it's a deeper discussion, but because Justin Fields' work ethic was questioned for a second. Then people backed off that. That's an old trope about African-American quarterbacks, right? No, he has a work ethic. And now it's shifted to something more subtle. It's more nuanced.
I agree with that.
Is he sophisticated enough to get the defenses quickly enough? And that's a more subtle trope. I'm just saying that's not applicable to Haskins. By the way – I understand.
That don't have nothing to do with Haskins.
But just sticking with Fields versus Zach Wilson, so I'm sensitive to that. It's one of the reasons that there aren't more African-American offensive coordinators or head coaches. That's a kind of like very subtle theme now that's being worked in that I think is bad, okay? I'm not talking about any of that. I'm just talking about arm talent. Zach Wilson, to me, Mel, has it even on a different level than Fields. I defer to you, but that's what it looks like to me.
Yeah, and next, I wouldn't get involved in that whole thing about the work ethic and whatever. Joe Flacco said it wasn't always the first one in or the last one out. You won a Super Bowl here in Baltimore and had 10 really good years. Like I said, I don't have to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning to do a show that starts at 7. If I get up at 7, at 6:45, I might still be okay. Everybody learns and evolves once they're in the league. Joe Flacco had a great career here in Baltimore. He's got a Super Bowl ring. He was unstoppable in the postseason. So you don't always have to have that 10 in terms of passion, work ethic to be a successful quarterback in this league. And in terms of Justin Fields, he's still young. He'll learn what needs to be done here. And I think the fact of the matter is, who gets the locker room? And if you don't get the locker room based on what happened against Clemson when that Skowski hit took place and you played through that painful injury and led your team to a victory over Trevor Lawrence, performance over all the talk usually gets players' attention. And the performance, on a performance level, Justin Fields had few peers the last 2 years at the collegiate level, outside of two football games, Indiana and Northwestern. He was relatively flawless in all those other games.
No question. We're about 3 weeks away from the NFL draft. Hard to believe. We'll continue to talk to the one and only Mel Kiper Jr. Thank you for gracing us with your presence, sir. We will talk to you soon. Have a fabulous day. All right. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. The 2021 Major League Baseball All-Star Game will be getting a new host city on Friday. MLB announcing it's moving the Midsummer Classic out of Atlanta's Truist Park in response to new voting legislation recently passed in Georgia. Max, I'll begin with you on this one. Do you agree or disagree with MLB moving the All-Star Game?
Absolutely agree. I applaud them, and I applaud Tony Clark for bringing it up in the first place, suggesting it as an idea. Look, the issue with the voting law, because you're going to hear plenty of spin about it, it's already out there. The problem is this. Let's start with this. There was no widespread voter fraud in the last election. It didn't exist. And so this is a solution to a problem that doesn't exist. So even if you say it's simply to appease voters who believe there was a problem, the idea of that problem, the specter of it, was raised by the losing side in order to try to undermine a free and fair election. And so if you're now appeasing those voters, even if the claim is, but it's toothless, it's not really doing that much to suppress the vote. That's pretty weak sauce, considering there was no problem in the first place and you created the impression that there was. Secondly, stringent voter ID laws in various states have been shown to suppress the vote of people of color disproportionately. And that's what we have here. Among the things in this law is more stringent voter ID. Now, is that exactly like a literacy test or something? No, it's not exactly like that. But we're talking about Georgia. We're talking about a state which fought for slavery during the Civil War. We are talking about an area of the country which during Reconstruction, after the war, when African-American men, at least, were entitled to vote, voter rolls were purged so that in some southern states, from the tens of thousands, it went just to the couple hundreds of eligible black voters, or not eligible, of black people who could actually vote. And that really took away African-American power in this country post-slavery. So that's the backdrop. The backdrop is in an area with a long history of and a deep history, an insidious history of suppressing the black vote. Here comes an election because Georgia is now actually a blue state. Atlanta and Sutton and counties with disproportionately African-American voters helped make it that way. And now in a state legislature where the state Senate is overwhelmingly one party, that party is further empowering itself and taking steps to suppress the vote under the guise of election integrity when there was enormous integrity in the last election. All this, and Stephen A., finally, I just want to say that many of the same people who say about Colin Kaepernick, for example, hey, you have the right to voice your opinion, you have the constitutional right, but then there could be economic repercussions, you know? Well, here, the Georgia legislature can do what they want, but then private companies and individuals are entitled to say, you know what, that's not for us. We're going to take our business elsewhere. And of course, now the next reaction is cries of cancel culture. And Stephen A., you know, cancel culture is an issue for me. I don't think it's a good idea in many instances, but sometimes it's a very good idea. And this is one of those cases.
I don't disagree with a single word that you said. I completely support MLB moving the All-Star game. But I will acknowledge that I sit here a bit disgusted because I think that there's another angle to look at, particularly when you're talking about us here on ESPN discussing this, because we are a sports network and we've seen the actions that leagues and the individuals playing in these respective leagues have been willing to take as it pertains to social justice issues and things of that nature over the last year or so. So let's take a couple of things into account, because essentially, you know, I was watching a Smirconish on CNN Saturday morning. I think he does a hell of a job. And I was watching him with one of the Georgia officials. And obviously, I've been reading up on it. And the four things that I charted down, which Smirconish had actually articulated thereafter. I read it first and then I saw his show. He was talking about imposes new voter ID requirements for absentee ballots, empowers state officials to take over local election boards, which I think is a very big deal. Obviously, the Secretary of State, you can ultimately be replaced if they don't like, the results. They don't, or they deem you incompetent or whatever the case, whatever excuse they can come up with to just alter personnel to some degree because they don't like a particular outcome. Limits use of ballot drop boxes. I think that's something that has to be discussed as well at some other point. And then they talked about making it a crime for the warden and all of that other stuff, which is not entirely true when you listen to the Georgia officials break it down. And with the voter ID, even though I appreciate the point that you brought up, Max, on on so many occasions and on a multitude of different issues, your ID is required in other areas. So it being required there, I'm not so sure that's that big of a deal to me. What's a bigger deal to me is obviously state officials being able to take over local elections and the Secretary of State being able to be replaced. But let me get to the bigger point that I have here. We're looking at Major League Baseball and we're applauding what they do. How many times, Molly and Max, did you see me come on the air last year and in the last few months when we were talking about violence on the part of police officers against unarmed black folks, Breonna Taylor and others, obviously George Floyd, Eric Garner, the list goes on and on, Philando Castile in Minnesota, all of this other stuff. We pointed to these things. And what did I religiously say time and time and time again? Rather than just take a knee, rather than protest to heighten the level of attention, think about the money that these players are earning. Think about the cachet it brings. Take into account Russell Westbrook clapping back at me the other day when he was like, it's not about, he's always a champion because he's a champion off the court. And he's talking about how, you know, helping to build generational wealth and empower folks. Well, I pointed to those kind of things to say, then that means you have the power to influence legislation because that's where real change takes place. See, you got folks, right? Again, I'm a registered independent, even though I lean, you know, I mean, I've only voted for one Republican in my life, but I have a lot of conservative views, particularly fiscally and unapologetically, so I can't stand the taxes that we have to pay in New York and California and stuff like that. Fair enough, but I'm a liberal in a lot of different ways. Here's the point, guys. When you look at it from that perspective, you got folks protesting. But what are the Republicans showing you they do? They go out and they influence legislation. So while everybody was making noise about what we didn't like and what needed to be changed, they were in the process of manipulating change legislatively. Now, obviously, Stacey Abrams and the crew in Atlanta and in Georgia, they got ample time to address this and to work around whatever they need to work around. So that's the good news. But the fact of the matter is, it just shows you where we need to have our eyes on the ball in terms of using the cachet and the power that we have available to us to influence legislation, because that's where real change takes place. On far too many occasions, we talk about doing things, but we don't really hit it where it needs to be hit.
Well,
that's doing so legislatively. You could talk about it being a blue state now because you know what? Ossoff and Warnock won the elections as Democrats.
You mentioned Stacey Abrams.
But Stacey Abrams is the real deal, no question about it. She's a future star. She's a star now. But the point is, none of that was able to stop this.
Well,
because they had the people in the State House to make it happen.
I would say, Stephen A., you're right. Local organizing is a very big thing, but gerrymandering is also a very big thing, and that's mm-hmm. done intentionally to
sure.
also, throughout history,
by both sides,
suppress African American political power.
Right.
What's especially distasteful
everyone's trying to manipulate
about,
it, Max.
About what's happening. What's especially distasteful is that, once again, what's happening, and you brought up the Secretary of State could be removed, right? Like, why is in Georgia? Why is that significant? Because Raffensperger stood yes. up to the president at the time, who was pressuring him to overturn a free and fair
That's
election
right.
because he didn't like the result based on untrue, you know, false fraud charges, right? So the fact that this is now being appeased, that these kind of fraudulent fraud charges are being appeased is not good, but particularly when you can analyze and isolate instances where you say that will suppress or at least is intended to suppress the black vote.
Mm-hmm. And Commissioner Rob Manfred said this is the best way to demonstrate our values as a sport. And I think this is really big of Major League Baseball. It's something I definitely would have expected from the NBA, but not necessarily baseball. So really a step in the right direction. And I know LeBron James co-signed that as he's also a part of the baseball family now as well with his association with the Red Sox.
Well, Molly,
there, fellas, when we come back here. Yep.
I said, Molly, the one thing, LeBron James is the one person that's is about the voting. He's about making a difference legislatively in a very conspicuous
Absolutely.
Fashion, which is why he should be applauded. That's what all of the players and all of the leagues need to be doing, focusing on changing things legislatively.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/firsttake. That's amazon.com/firsttake to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Oh, yeah. Y'all know what time it is. It's time for Stephen's A-List. And this is a big A-List. This is a big moment, Molly. It's a big moment, Max. You know why? Because I got the one and only Dickie V in the house to critique my all-time biggest shots in NCAA history, okay? NCAA tournament history. Let's go to the list. Number 5 on that list. Give it to me, y'all, please. Mario Chalmers for Kansas. All right, 2008. Look at that shot. The three-pointer over Derrick Rose to tie it and send the game into overtime. In overtime that the Kansas Jayhawks will ultimately win to capture the national title over John Calipari's Memphis Tigers. Let's go to number 4 on the list, please. Give it to me. Christian Laettner, 1992. One way, turn around, drills another to win the game and to send Duke to the Final Four. Christian Laettner hits a shot over Kentucky to get Duke to the Final Four. Let's go to number 3 on the list, please. You just saw it Saturday night. Suggs, Jalen Suggs, that all-world player. You, first of all, you missed the block. And then after the block, just skated up court and throw that beautiful bounce pass to Timmy. That was a great play, but this is the game-winning shot. It was to get them to the national title game. I got him at number 3. Why is it not 2 or 1? Here's the reason. Number 2, give it to me. Michael Jeffrey Jordan. Okay, 1982. The national title on the line. Gets it from Sleepy Floyd. Drills a 17-foot jumper to win the national title. There were other elements that took place in that game, but that was the biggest shot. That was what really introduced Michael Jordan to the world. He was a freshman, y'all, in 82, and that's what he did. Let's go to number 1 on the list. You know what number 1 on the list. It's Mr. Chris Jenkins for the Villanova Wildcats against North Carolina, Houston, Texas, 2016. I was there, y'all. I was there. Tied. And then he comes down court. Archiachino at the buzzer. He gives it to Chris Jenkins, who drills a 3 to win the national title. Those are my top 5 shots in NCAA tournament history. The Bryce Drews of the world and other big-time shots took place, but we talking about either going to the Final Four or going to the national title game or winning a national title. There's more at stake, and the bottom line is those shots were the biggest shots in NCAA tournament history so far as I'm concerned. How you like that list, Dickie V? How do you like that list?
Well, let me tell you this. I think bright men, intelligent guys, think alike. I like everything on that list for you, except I'll drop 1. I would drop Mr. Jordan to number 3, and I move Suggs up there. Yep. I think Suggs, too. I agree with you about Jenkins hitting that shot. Jenkins hitting that shot, going to the it's unbelievable, winning a national title. You got to give value to that. But Suggs' shot, are you kidding me? Here it is. They're undefeated. They're going to fight for survival. They're going to try to advance. Jordan's shot was more of a basically good shot. This was a dramatic shot. 33 feet, Stephen A. Come on.
Yeah.
Unbelievable
that he made
it. Yeah,
Dickie V.
Michael's shot.
But Dickie V.
I love Michael. No. I disagree.
That was to get to the national title. That wasn't to win the national championship. That's what I'm saying.
I know. But you got to get there first to win it. And right now they're going to try to win it tonight. I agree with everything on that list, except I think Suggs' shot really is unbelievable because of how dramatic it was.
It was an unbelievable shot.
The distance and the...
Yeah, surprise, Stephen A. Dickie V is right, because the national title on the line is why Jenkins over UNC is number one. That's why it's number one over Suggs. But I don't think you could put anything else over Suggs, including Jordan Schott. There's no time left. Like the, in fact, even though it wasn't for the national title, Dickie V, if they would have been down a point or two, and that, you know, I might have said it was the greatest ending ever, only because they were tied. So the same thing happens with Jenkins, but it's for the national title. But that Suggs shot was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was unbelievable because they're undefeated and trying to go undefeated for the year. Everybody having a big, big favorite. I mean, let's give a tip of the hat right now before we go any further to UCLA. UCLA played their hearts out. UCLA was unbelievable this entire tournament. Nobody gave them a shot. I don't care. Stephen A. didn't give them a shot. Nobody gave them a shot.
Right.
They came in losing four games in a row in the regular season. And here it is. They're like one, you know, they're one play away from winning that game. The referee calls a situation. He called a charge instead of a block.
It was a charge. A whole it was a charge. It yeah, was a charge.
No, I agree with you. It was a charge, Stephen. I agree with you.
All right. It was the right play. It was the right call.
No, it's going to make this even bigger, Dickie V. It'll be even bigger in retrospect if Gonzaga goes undefeated and wins the national title. This shot by Suggs will look even bigger as time
goes
by.
That's fair, Max. I don't disagree with you there. But what I would say to both of y'all is it was a terrific shot. I mean, I'm sure he didn't call backboard. A little bit of luck came into it. But give the guy credit where credit is due. I understand you looking at Jordan, just a basic 17-foot pull-up jumper. But Dickie V, I recall the great Dickie V. The great, because you've been around that long. You've been entertaining us for that long. You've been educating us for that long. I remember Dickie V in 1982. He's a PTP. Baby, look at that, the pressure, and he's a freshman, the pressure that comes with it, and he had no problem, got it in motion. There was no doubt that Michael Jordan was taking that shot, and you gave a lot of credit to the fact that there was pressure. So that's why I got it at number two, and I'm gonna keep Michael Jordan at number two.
Hey, let me tell you this. You're right about Michael Jordan. I got in trouble. Ralph Sampson was three times player of the year. And when I did one of his games, Jordan against Sampson, and they pulled a dramatic win, I said, forget it. Forget it. Ralph Sampson, he's not player of the year. It's Michael the Magnificent. He's the 3S man, like Stephen A. Super scintillating, sensational. He's solid gold, like Molly. Absolutely. And he's like Max, a PTPer, a primetime performer. Come on, you kidding me? I can't argue about Michael Jordan. He's the greatest ever to lace him up. But here comes LeBron.
What?
Dickie V with some Monday motivation. I'm here for all of it. Our hype man right now. I love it. Can we talk about tonight, though? We got a national championship game tonight. Dickie V, you can go wherever you want. But essentially, I want to know who you think's going to win and why.
You know, Molly, when you look at this matchup, isn't it really great that we have preseason, the number one team in the country, Gonzaga. Preseason number two, we had Baylor. And here it is. COVID shut them down during the season. Could not play each other. But now they're going to play on a big stage for the big prize. I know I'm looking forward tonight to joining Sean McDonough. We're calling the game on ESPN International in like over 200 countries around the world. CBS has the games in the States. But I'm telling you, I think we're going to see one great battle. I think there's a couple of factors involved in this game. You look at, certainly when you look at Baylor, they shoot the three, multiple guys, whether it be Teague, whether it be Mitchell, Butler, Flagler, they got a number of guys that shoot the three, and they better make the three. They got to make the three. And if they get good looks, like UCLA, who had ball movement, player movement, UCLA got good looks against that defense of Gonzaga. If they give them good looks, the way they shoot the ball, they could go on a spurt like they did in the first half against Cincinnati. Sean and I couldn't believe it during the game, the way they broke that game up and were up 25 at the half. Mm-hmm. Bottom line is they forced turnovers as well. If they could turn Suggs over, you know, he's had a little bit of problem turning the ball over because he tries to make spectacular plays. I mean, I love him. I love his guts, his heart, his toughness. If that happens, that could lead to an upset. Even though, Molly, you want to know, I said right now, the VBI, it goes 83.
Let's get
83, Gonzaga, 77, baby, for Baylor.
I'm with you on that. I got That's Gonzaga winning. With. I got Gonzaga winning. I don't see them running away in a blowout, but I will tell you what Gonzaga has to be concerned about. That kind of win, Max and Dickie V, can deflate you. I mean, when you go into overtime, when you've got that tough of a contest, you might have, you might, I mean, it's going to take a lot for Gonzaga. It's in the national championship game, so they'll be up for it. But at the same time, if any little bit is missing, Baylor might be able to take advantage of that, particularly with their guard play. And I'm a Mitchell fan. Mitchell can play, and I like Butler and Teague as well. But I will tell you this. I said it early in the show, Dickie V, and I'm going to say it again. Timmy, that's going to be the key, because let me tell you something. Guard play, even though Suggs has been turning the ball over a little bit, we know he's a stud. Nembhard, this brother, I like him a lot. He makes good decisions. He's a heady basketball player. He can do some things. And Ayayi, this kid had the game of his life Saturday night. But Timmy is a man amongst boys in that post area. And Baylor had better have an answer for that. If they don't find a way to neutralize Timmy, Gonzaga's running away with this game. They're running away with it because Baylor makes its mistakes and they can get erratic. And Timmy will exploit that in the post area. They're going to get some high percentage shots because they move so well without the ball. They're selfless. They share the basketball. And Baylor's going to have to be up on its game defensively. They're going to have to hit threes. They're going to have to hit free throws. And they're going to have to neutralize Timmy in order to win this national championship game.
Well, you know, Stephen A., that puts the burden on the inside player. I mean, his name is unbelievable, Chachua. He's going to have to really guard and be physical on Timmy. But I agree with you again. I agree. Timmy is going to be the difference maker. No doubt in my mind. I don't think they handle him in the post, and that breaks the game open. I think it'll be a close game. Baylor's too good for them to run away with him. I think Baylor is too good defensively, and they shoot the three too well. There'll be no blowout. I don't see any chance whatsoever of blowout city. And to get to your other point, where you made a great point about the emotional effect of that game the day before, I don't buy that. I think the adrenaline, I think the fact that all year preparing, you know, everybody told me, they said, oh, wait till Gonzaga gets in a situation where they play tight, the pressure will get to them. Well, the pressure, they handled that pressure with poise. They had an answer. Every time UCLA came at them and got up on them, they just kept coming back. So I don't think these kids are going to be affected by the emotion of the game 48 hours earlier, or 24 hours, whatever the time frame is. I'm too dumb in math to figure it out.
Dickie V, I agree with you. I think that was Gonzaga's close call. That was the game they were supposed to lose. And the reason they didn't lose it, and even though I agree with Stephen A's logic about Timmy, the reason they didn't lose it is because not Kispert, not Timmy, but in fact their best player, when it mattered most, had the block, had the pass, and had the shot, right? Like all three. And to me, Dickie V, that's going to be the difference in the national title game, even though there's great guard play on the other side and Baylor's got a defense and the guards can play defense. Jalen Suggs wins this game, I believe. I think Gonzaga, the game Gonzaga was supposed to lose, in now looking back at it, was UCLA. They survived it. I think they win the title.
Well, you know, survive in advance has always been the cry. Jimmy V was the one that started that. He always used to tell me all the time, he'd say, Dickie V, there'll be a game out there where you just got to fight for your life to survive. And there's no doubt that Gonzaga had to fight for their life to survive. And by the way, that's one of the greatest games of all time in tournament action. I don't think anybody could debate that any way possible. And that's what equated to when you see Suggs' shot, when we talk and define March Madness, just show Suggs' shot. That's March Madness at its best. The drama, the excitement. It's the greatest sporting event of them all. You know, yeah, the NBA championship's great. 4 out of 7, you lose 3 times, you still win it. But when you got this shot by Suggs, baby, to take it down off the glass,
unreal.
The bank was open.
It's unbelievable.
Mr. Suggs, unbelievable. It was awesome, baby, Stephen A.
It was. One of the great games I've ever seen.
No question. And listen, international Dickie V, the women's game was pretty exciting, even though I wasn't too excited about it because UConn wasn't in it. But it did end in dramatic fashion. How likely do you think we'll see that type of finish tonight in the men's national championship game?
Well, I'll tell you one thing, you know, and salute certainly Stanford hanging in, winning it. Just a tenacious Arizona team. I mean, McDonald was unbelievable. Haley Jones was tough as well. But that was a great game, no question about it. I don't know if it'll come to a buzzer beater, but I think it's going to be one heck of a game. And I agree with Stephen A. I think the difference maker on the floor is Timmy. I really do. I know his footwork inside his post-up ability. Tara Vanderveer marching on. I'll tell you one thing, the coach has done a great job down there in Arizona with that team as well. I mean, West Coast is becoming dominant. Hey, what about this East Coast bias? They always cry. Forget about it. I mean, the East Coast has dominated for years, but not this year. The parties belong to the people out of West.
I want to give love to the women's college basketball. It was fantastic. I was sad to see Paige Buckets get knocked off. She was just tired, Molly, because she obviously, I don't know why they had her at times guarding McDonald, because that girl was just running her and making her tired and all of that stuff. I think that was a mistake on UConn's part, Gina Auriemma's part. But I'll tell you, at the end of the day, Arizona was incredibly impressive, and obviously Stanford, South Carolina, Friday night, Dawn Steele leading that program. Can't say enough about that as well. Mm-hmm. The women's college basketball was just as great as the men's college basketball was this weekend. It was really beautiful to see.
Doesn't it feel like the women's tournament almost turned a corner this year?
I believe
in terms of media response to it.
Because we ain't talking about this UConn, Max. Because we're not talking about this UConn. Stanford, Arizona, South Carolina, all of them there. Yeah.
And even the way Arizona lost, like McDonald going out like that, that's leaving it all on the court. If it doesn't go in, it doesn't go in. But it came down to it. It was incredibly dramatic.
Should have hit the open man in the corner wide up. Open lady. I'm sorry, in the corner, though.
But Friday night's games were ridiculous, too, as Stephen A. just mentioned.
Yes.
No, I love comments you're making about the women's game. Fundamentally, Molly, the game has been, they're playing the game at a really high level, and it's becoming more and more, multiple teams. I agree with that. McDonald was unreal. But are you, Mr. Smith, are you questioning Gino Auriemma with all those national titles on the way he played a girl? Are you kidding me? Are you questioning Gino Auriemma?
Diggy V.
You know, is phenomenal.
Perfection is only with the man above. Down here with the Meons, with the rest of us, no one's perfect. Gino Auriemma was not perfect. He's phenomenal, great, but he's not perfect.
I'll tell you one thing. I agree with you again. I don't know what this is. I got a love affair going on with my man Stephen A. I agree with him again.
Oh, my gosh.
I want to thank you.
Molly does, too. She just tries to deny it. Molly loves me to death. You know what I'm saying? She didn't comment about the fly plays.
I actually wanted to say.
That's all right.
Stephen A, the outfit's on point. The outfit's great. I knew L.A. Steve would show up. He always steps it up a little more when he's on the West Coast. I know what it is. It's all good. But don't try to sit here and say the women's tournament wasn't more exciting because all these other programs. It was so exciting because UConn had the best player in the country.
She's the best. She's the best story.
Buckets. So don't try me with these other schools.
Hold on. She's the best story, which I said coming into the weekend. But again, we took for granted. They've been to 13 straight Final Fours. We take for granted UConn. To see these other programs come and knock them off is great for women's college basketball because it gives a sense of parity.
I agree. To Molly, Stephen A.
I agree with
Dickie V. There's some great coaching storylines.
See what that
as
does
well.
To Molly when you say, you can see it in her face, it almost winces, when you say, when UConn got knocked off, it was great
knocked
for
off.
She could barely sit
be back.
There.
Paige is going to win a national title before she leaves. She's going to win a national title.
Death, taxes, and UConn in the Final Four. You all know what it is. All right, Dickie V, always a pleasure. Covering the game international tonight. Looking forward to you on the call. We will talk to you tomorrow, sir. We will have a champion. Try to get some rest.
Wow, you're going to have me on tomorrow again? Wow, that's big time on my resume. Yeah. 5 straight times with Stephen A., Molly, and Max. I made it big time. I'm going to celebrate. I made it big time. First Take wants me 5 straight with Stephen A. I love you. Love you, Molly. Love you, Max. Have a great one. Tonight, remember what I said. 83, Gonzaga. 77, Baylor. Sorry, Scott Drew. You know, he's introduced me at my gala. He's introducing me. He may not introduce me when he hears that score.
I got 85-80.
We'll have mimosas ready for you in the morning, Dickie V. All right, we'll talk to you. We got to go. One more NFL topic I want to get to with you fellas really quickly. Aaron Rodgers getting set to guest host Jeopardy tonight. Get it, Aaron. approaching it like any game he's ever played. I love that. That was his quote telling Kenny Mayne over the weekend, that he studied hours and hours of shows. We know how cerebral he is. Stephen A., do you think Roger should retire to host Jeopardy?
Yeah, I do. Well, first of all, listen, I want to see the man on the football field.
What?
So I'd miss the hell out of him. I want to see the man on the football field. But in the sense of business, when you don't have any guaranteed dollars because they gave you a $6.8 million bonus and they treat you the way that they treat you, and he's clearly not happy about it. Just listen to watch him talking to Kenny Mayne. You know he's not happy. I got news for you. You know what? There's life after football. Hey, are you ready for this, y'all? Do you have any idea how much Judge Judy, for example? They say that Judge Judy
makes
$40 million
unreal.
A year. Excuse me. Listen. Aaron Rodgers is going to make more. If Aaron Rodgers, and if they were smart, they'd pick him because he'd attract a younger audience. He'd attract females. He'd attract younger males as well. If he does this right, Aaron Rodgers can make more money hosting Jeopardy than he made playing football. I'd consider it. I'm telling you that right now. I'd love to host a game show. And if Aaron Rodgers gets to do it, he should do it.
Why is
it either
or?
He could do both. You just
yeah, why is it either? Why is it either or? I don't know. I think you guys do both. You go out for a game show, you tape a whole bunch of episodes, and you go play football.
Yeah.
Look at Michael Strahan, Stephen A.
Yeah.
Yes, it was after his football career. He's doing all these different jobs. The money's piling up. Why not? Why shouldn't he do both?
That's right.
Especially, by the way,
Max. You think Tom Brady's going to be hosting Jeopardy? You think
he'll be
in the Monday night booth.
Before Tom Brady gets any ideas that he wants to.
And football and winning chips. He doesn't have time for hosting Jeopardy in the offseason.
You got to let us answer you, Molly. You got to let us answer you. He'll be in the booth. Like Drew Brees is for NBC, Tom Brady will be in the booth doing Monday night football.
I don't know. He might be too big to be in the booth.
He's going
to
own the booth. Yeah, he's going to own the booth. Here's the thing.
Rodgers
got to do this for Jeopardy before Tom Brady gets any ideas to do it himself, Molly. Don't let Tom Brady beat Aaron Rodgers out for Jeopardy, too. Be a disaster.
Tom Brady would not beat Aaron Rodgers out for Jeopardy.
I agree.
No, I got a couple things to say here. So we asked fans at home who they think is going to win tonight. 68% said the Zags. I can confirm both Max and Stephen A. when we initially did this, both picked Gonzaga as well when we had Coach Mark Few on. I also need to mention this because this was actually a sad moment in my life too. So Stephen A., yesterday I'm talking to my Aunt Linda, wishing her a happy Easter, et cetera. I didn't get to see you. And she's like, did I hear correctly? Stephen A. is going to be in General Hospital again? Can you find out when so I have something to look forward to?
I would be.
It's like, this is a sad state of affairs.
You could call it a sad state of affairs all you want to. A lot of people are stopping me in the streets and calling me Brick. They ain't even calling me Stephen A. Last week in April, I will be on General Hospital. I have the specific date.
Linda, last week in April. They're stopping him in the streets. They
don't
know him as Stephen A.
3 days,
now
Molly.
They only
three
know him as
days.
Brick. Max, you don't even have a comeback or something for that. We're just letting this happen on ESPN Airways. We've created a monster, America. A monster. Goodbye.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.